On this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss James Franklin's weekly press conference, Drew Aller's status for Friday's game against Michigan State, then we preview that game against the Spartans. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat reporter for the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, it has been not that long, and also Penn State somehow plays again very soon.
Short week, John. Gotta love a short week, a holiday week, too. Man, there are not enough hours in the day this week. I always, you know, when Penn State has this Thanksgiving game, right, as much as I love to complain about Rutgers and Maryland and the trips there and that there's never been a rivalry, selfishly, those are great trips for me because I can go home to Downingtown, visit my parents, and then just kind of get on my way from there. Thanksgiving weekend travel when they are away absolutely sucks.
To Detroit.
To Detroit we go. It's happened before, of course, because of the Land-Grant Trophy where they've been in East Lansing. So at least we are shaving an hour and a half off of our drive by the game being in Detroit and not Lansing. John and I will be hitting the road bright and early Wednesday morning.
Bright and early for me, normal time for most people.
Yeah, as he sees this, he's dying a bit inside. On the busiest travel day of the year, we will be en route to Detroit, like we should, John. I mean, the epicenter, really, this week of football.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Packers-Lions.
The Clifford's family will be playing.
Yeah, the scheduling gods did the Clifford family a real solid when they laid this out. Yes. Packers-Lions, Thanksgiving, 12:30 on Thursday. John and I will be there along with some other friends on the beat. We will be there. I don't think it's probably going to go too hot for my Packers, but I will be optimistic because that's what I do with them.
I will get to be an unbiased observer, and I am just looking forward to watching you spiral.
Two Packers fans and two Eagles fans are going to a Packers-Lions game in Detroit, which is it's a tough ticket, John. We had to, you know, I've been lurking on the secondary market for months for this one. Because the Lions are actually good. People want to be there. But the other crazy thing, too, is then, of course, you've got the game in Ann Arbor on Saturday. So you put Penn State's game at Ford Field in there Friday night. Lot happening in Detroit. We are going to be in the center of it all. Man, the Land-Grant Trophy, what a showcase moment for this beauty.
There's nothing like it, and I am so glad that we never have to sarcastically talk about this thing again after this week. Like, never again, not as frequently.
John, I teased it last week. I will handle all of the heavy lifting when it comes to the Land-Grant Trophy, pun intended, because that thing is a monstrosity.
It broke last year on Beaver Stadium's.
Oh, it always breaks. That's the problem. I did a long-form story on it last year, one of my favorite things that I've written at The Athletic, on how in the world this trophy came to be. And, you know, when you see it and it looks very disjointed and it looks like it's pieced together, it's because it is. Like, that's literally how it was. School administrators were told years ago, each send us one thing and we're going to slap it on this trophy. Wild story. I'll recirculate it this week if you didn't get a chance to read it last year. It's a really funny story. And, you know, John, I was a little bit disappointed, though, because I was looking at our credentials for Friday night. And it does not look like we get any field access because...
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough for like warm-ups and actually doing our jobs. But also, selfishly, one of my greatest pleasures doing this job is watching the winning team's players try and hoist the Land-Grant Trophy and realize how big it is. Like, that is, to me, that's why they don't pay us the big bucks here. But that's what we get to do in this job that so few other people can. So don't worry, I'll still be keeping an eye out for it Friday night. And the good news is the winner gets to keep it extra long moving forward.
Yeah. This is, by the way, I think this is the first away game all year where we won't have post-game field access, right? Is that true?
I don't remember. Maybe Illinois. I don't even remember where I was last week, John, at this point.
Yeah, that is fair. But no, we are hurtling toward that game on Friday very quickly. But we did speak to James Franklin yesterday. And before we get too far into that, even, yes, Monday, a Monday presser, which was on time now because that's when they always are. But before we get too far into that, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the thumbs up button below. Subscribe to us. It always helps us out. Same thing if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating and leave us a review on there. It would be very helpful. But yeah, we spoke to James yesterday. We were recording on Tuesday, as we always do. And he had some questions for us, which extended what could have been a 35-minute press conference into a 45-minute one and accomplished not a lot.
Not just one Thanksgiving question. Everyone got three.
Three.
Yeah. You know what? Here's my hot take on this, John. Like, the three foods that, like, to me, the most interesting category was, do you like Thanksgiving dinner better or the leftovers better? Right? Like, that's the other one.
Yeah.
The other two, like cornbread or dinner rolls, collard greens versus green beans, like, you're missing it all. Like, it's all about the stuffing and the cranberry sauce. Like, that's everything.
Out on
else.
Cranberry sauce.
See, that to me, everything else is just irrelevant. Like, when I'm going to Thanksgiving, that's what I want. Except I'm sure that's not what we'll be eating at Ford Field this year.
I'm sure we'll be eating.
We'll be drinking other things and consuming other things at Ford Field this year. But yeah, so I tried to, you know, speed up the process and just listed out some numbers when he got to me. I don't think he appreciated that, because I like Thanksgiving, but I also like the leftovers. But I just really wanted to ask my question, you know. So it was our annual. I guess this is like our annual Thanksgiving tradition. With
James, it seems like it now. By the way, the reason, let's get this straight, it's mashed potatoes, gravy, corn, turkey, and stuffing, and all of it just kind of mixed together, and that's why it all tastes
it's
so
okay
good.
If it touches, yeah, totally fine if it touches. I'm not
you want I get a little bit of each in every bite. I'm not like out here, you know, stirring things together, but I'm trying to get a little bit of each in every bite. That's why it makes it is
I'm not
makes it delicious.
I'm not a huge like mashed potato person in general. Like, that's incorrect. Just that's not
that may be an opinion, but it's a wrong one.
My mom's oyster stuffing is incredible. Oyster stuffing, cranberry sauce. That's really what I'm gonna miss this Thanksgiving, John. I mean, the family part is nice and all that, but oyster stuffing, man, I'm gonna miss it big time.
As you said, though, we'll be replacing it with plenty of beverages.
Plenty of beverages at Ford Field. Yeah, maybe there's like a stuffing themed beer or something that we can get. I don't know.
That would be nice. But no, that was the main takeaway from the presser, and definitely not that James Franklin said that Drew Aller is expected to play against Michigan State.
Which, I did not expect that.
No, I didn't either. And again, I said this on the last episode.
I know where you're going.
You're constantly told that he is not going to answer these questions by him. And then he answers the questions. So we're going to, one, it's our job to keep asking them anyways. But two, like, you are answering them. Like, this is, we are getting an answer, and we got an answer yesterday. I believe it was Rich Scarsella asked the question. He said that James said that he expects Drew to play, and he expects Bo to have a role. I think was the
a role, and he said not a dinner role.
Yeah, and not
a
dinner role.
Like, right. Well played moment.
Yeah, of course you would think that. I put my head down and shook my head. Yes, I know. But
I'm
was,
an easy laugh, John. I'm an easy laugh.
I am too, but it's got to be funny. That's the bar that I have set. But no, I think we were all pretty surprised when we got that information. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't surprised that Drew was going to play. I was surprised that James gave us that info on a Monday. He seemed pretty optimistic post-game when he talked about Drew. And even though we saw Drew struggling to raise his arm above shoulder height, like, you know, there wasn't, it didn't seem like there was much concern in general about his status. But I do think how they handle him this Friday is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I did not expect that we would see him on a short week, just the way he looked on the sidelines, like you mentioned, the inability or the limited mobility with his shoulder, with his arm. So to me, that was a really interesting thing to, one, offer that up on a short week. Again, we'll go to practice tonight, Tuesday night. We'll see kind of how he looks there. I'm assuming they will be in Haluba Hall tonight because it has been pouring all day in State College.
Very windy, too.
Windy, and my solar lights, John, have been on since about noon because that's how dark it's been.
That's not ideal.
Rough day around here. Certainly looks and feels like winter. But yeah, I mean, they're expecting Aller to go, but I think James Franklin has made it abundantly clear by this point that they want to keep getting Bo Prabula involved, that the package that they kept alluding to all year that we only saw against Maryland, and then we did see one snap of last week before Drew got hurt, that's part of the plans moving forward. It sounds like maybe that was kind of one of the things that Mike didn't want to use, and now they do want to use it. So, yeah, I'm very curious what he looks like, what the comfort level is. And, you got to be thinking too, John, if he takes one hit, right? How does he respond? Is he okay? I mean, what's the risk reward, I guess at that point for him. So that's the big storyline this week under the umbrella of the Land-Grant Trophy, of course.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm just going to continue to ignore the Land-Grant Trophy. I think the interesting thing is going to be how Drew handles when he has to run the ball. Like, does he just get down right away? Is he going to run the ball at all? Because this is one of the things I wrote about in my prediction story. They need to capitalize on the momentum they created in the ground game against Rutgers, yep. Right? Like, and there is part of that is just Bo Prabula is an excellent runner, right? And he is a better athlete than Drew. He is faster than Drew. Like, he is more agile. He sees rushing lanes better. Yeah, right. Totally different quarterback. And so that's going to open things up for the running backs because you're kind of having to account for him more than you would have to account for Aller. But you can still kind of build off of that when Aller's in the game, right? Like, it's not necessarily about Drew being able to run for these massive gains. It's when he has these massive openings that he takes them and takes the 8 yards in front of him, right? Like, instead of handing it off.
If and the 8 yards and again, is what he got hurt on.
Right. But, I mean, you got to get
exactly 8 yards. You got to get the 8 yards.
But James did mention that the guy he got hit by, he didn't see him because he was covered up by another player. Kind of came out of nowhere at the last second. But I do think, like, if Drew keeps it more on those plays, it will help the running game moving forward. If they run a lot of RPO stuff, right, where he gets the ball out a little bit quick and gets on the perimeter, you know, that can help it moving forward. I just think there are more ways to capitalize off of some of what they learned on Saturday and not allowing defenses. And again, we're at the end of the year, so how much does it really matter? But not allowing defenses to capitalize on the fact that, okay, Bo Prabula is not in the game. We don't have to worry as much about the quarterback taking off or getting rid of the ball in this situation.
Yeah, your passing game is what it is. It's not going to drastically just everything's going to click this week, right? Like, I think that was kind of what we learned against Rutgers was, hey, this is probably your recipe, your formula for winning games right now. It's not the prettiest. It's not what we expected back in August or all throughout the summer. It's not what you expect when you have a five-star quarterback with this kind of arm talent. But this is what Penn State is, and this is what I think you just have to kind of lean on. I do think that it certainly sounds like at least the game planning process has been pretty collaborative with Jaywon Sider and Ty Howell. James Franklin said he was pleased with that, how both guys have worked together, kind of how they approached it, not only game day, but leading up to game day and the way the scripts were done, the way the cards were all, you know, written out and all those types of things in advance. Because again, that's such a big piece to this right now, too, is you've got this operation behind the scenes that is going on. And James Franklin offered up on Monday that the Rutgers game plan was smaller and tighter than any game plan Penn State had all year. To me, that was interesting. So I asked about that and I said, well, you know, basically, was this just the perfect storm that had happened this way, or were the previous game plans, i.e. the ones under Mike Yurcich, were they too robust? And then James Franklin said he wasn't sure how to answer the question because he didn't want to say anything.
He gave a preamble divisive about how he didn't want to say anything divisive or disparaging before then kind of doing that.
Before then saying, well, essentially, I mean, he didn't go all in on it. I think he just, I think.
No, what he but like he allows you, like, to, he allows you to read between the lines, which, like, I don't know, like, I think it's kind of silly to be like, I don't want to say anything disparaging and then intimate those same things. Right. Like, I don't know.
I don't think you offer up that it was the smallest and tightest game plan and not expect someone to then ask about it. Right. Like, that to me is just, as a reporter, that's a question that begged to follow up, at least in my head, my mind. So I asked about it.
And especially it's the biggest story of the week, right? Like, more important than Drew Aller's health, because
Aller's and the Land-Grant Trophy.
Again, more important than Aller's health, the rest of the season is what next season looks like, quite frankly, right? Because we've talked about their goals are, or one of their goals, at least to make the playoff, is out the window. And that doesn't resurface again until next year. And so whoever the next coordinator is more important than anything that can kind of happen these next couple games, meaning Michigan State in the bowl game. And this is relevant to that, right? Like, is he going to try and find someone that'll be more collaborative, someone that is willing to kind of pare that game plan down and not try and overcomplicate things? I had mentioned in the past that had been an issue with the previous the previous offense, right? Or the offense this year, like the, mm-hmm. the complexity of it. But yeah, I just think like these decisions are the ones that are going to matter. And so when you talk about them, you should be expected to be asked about them. And like you said, it's a perfectly good question. I thought his answer was interesting.
Yeah. I pulled the quote up in front of me. One of the things he said, it was a pretty long answer, about, you know, he said, even when he was a play caller, like it's always the challenge of the number of plays in the game plan, but also how many times do you rep the play versus just the concept. Right. And so the thing he said, I would also say the more complex the defense you're playing, then probably the smaller the game plan needs to be. The more base and standard the defense is, then maybe you can be a little bit more creative. You're trying to balance all those things each week. So, and he said, it's a constant battle and struggle. I do wonder moving forward, John, like what has he learned from this process with Mike Yurcich in terms of prep, communication, how the staff meshes together? Because it certainly sounds like there's some things there that you can, again, maybe read between the lines, maybe parse together, that this just wasn't fitting and aligning correctly, I think, kind of from a personality standpoint, probably, but also from the game planning aspect of it. Because he had said last week, he said he was asked about the game plan and how the planning and implementation of it.
There you go. Nailed it.
Big word today. Very big word. And how that all went. And Franklin said, like, yeah, you don't make the change that I made unless, like, that was an issue. Right. So this is more about just what was going wrong on Saturdays with this offense. Like, I think that's what we learned. Yeah, there were things going wrong, certainly on Saturdays, with the execution, with the game plan, with things that they practiced or not getting called, those types of things, going back to stuff that worked. But I think there's also the game planning piece too. And just how every other day of the week building up to Saturday seems like there were some issues there. So that was my big Monday takeaway.
Yeah, no, I think it's funny, like we talk about how he says that all of these things are issues. It's like, well, at the end of the day, like you kind of have to know those things going in, right? Like because it's the kind of thing. Now it is, I will say, it is tough to find that information in an interview because you're not mm-hmm. talking about a cohesive environment, but like you know, talking to people that know the person or what have you. Cause I can't imagine that this was surprising, right? Like that this mm-hmm. is out of character, maybe. Not to say it's like a bad character thing, but like clearly Mike Yurcich was convicted, right, in the things he believed and the things that he wanted to do, and he wanted to do it that way. And that's, you know, there are flaws in that, and there are benefits to that.
Some people are stubborn, John. We know people like that, right? People like that.
I'm the stubborn one. But no, I think, yeah, definitely never Audrey would never be stubborn. But no, I do think that is something that's going to be taken into consideration here, and the collaborative nature of it, and what James wants, or that collaboration doesn't have to fall by the wayside, but can't be as much of a priority, right? Like it has to be, I think you have to go one or the other. This is the head coach of the offense, and this is the guy who's going to run the offense.
That's what he said he wants.
Decisions. And these are the decisions they're going to make. People will help through that process, but at the end of the day, they get to make those calls and it's their offense and they run it. Or it's going to be a collaboration and everyone will work together and they will still get to call the plays and everything, but they will game plan together. They will work through things together. And by the way, this is true of most organizations in football. Mm-hmm. Like they collaborate like this throughout the week. Pretty much every NFL organization does it like this too. But I do think it is pretty clear based on, we've talked about the comments Mike Yurcich made in the past, that this was the most collaborative he's ever had to be, or at least collaborative than it was at Oklahoma State.
And he was not saying that, like, he didn't say that and was angry about it. He just said that this is what we are.
Yeah. And like, it's different, right? Well, if it's more collaborative than it was at Oklahoma State, that's an adjustment for him. And now 3 years should be plenty of time to adjust. But clearly, this was never the same offense that it was back then, right? Like this was never the same Yurcich offense. And I know we keep harping on the fact that Mike Yurcich is gone, but it's such an important thing that happened. And I don't think all that much changed from a schematic standpoint on Saturday, right? Like they did run more crossers, which is something that I've been saying all year.
We didn't see a wide receiver throw a pass, John.
Yeah, thank God. This was so interesting to me because winning in the middle of the field was a thing for Yursich offenses for years. And for whatever reason, it wasn't a key feature this season. And suddenly it was again. Like, we saw Tyler Warren get hit across the middle. Theo got hit across the middle too. But there were multiple plays where guys had,
yeah, because there were only runaway two guys routes. Who caught two passes. So it pressed a,
yeah, that's tough.
That probably has to narrow it down. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I thought Drew Aller looked more comfortable throwing the ball downfield. I don't know if that was just like maybe he was more relaxed. I don't know. You know, maybe it was a comfort thing all along with him, and they finally like let him, or he finally felt like in a place where he could do that. But it felt like the kind of closer to the offense of what maybe James Franklin wants his team's offenses to look like than what we'd seen all season. Let's take a brief break from the podcast to talk about the good people at Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, located at 201 Elmwood Street in State College, as I mentioned. Voodoo, great place to go get a beer, a place that I like to frequent. You know, the people there are great. Josh, Wes, and the rest of the crew there have always treated us well, have always been kind. Not to mention, they serve great beer.
They do, John, and get those beers to go this week. For Thanksgiving, take them with you on the road, because we all know after sitting in traffic, the holiday traffic, the family conversation, if maybe you're forever stuck at the kids table, if you got a big family, I know that feeling, big extended family.
That's tough.
Get that beer, take it with you. Yeah, I've probably like finally been upgraded out of the kids table the last couple years, and now I'm on the road and can't even enjoy it this year. So get those beers, take them with you. Or if you're coming back to town to State College, if this is home, swing by Voodoo, get something to eat, enjoy the scenery, maybe sit by the fire pit and watch as fall fades to winter around here.
Yeah, and you mentioned those fire pits. There's no better environment than sitting by those fire pits, staying warm and having a nice beer. You mentioned the kitchen. It's always great there. Of course, they have pub trivia on Tuesdays at 6 and bingo on Thursdays at 6. Don't miss those nights. But yeah, Voodoo is one of our favorite places to be. That's Voodoo Brewing Company at 201 Elmwood Street. Back to the show.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, again, the timeline is still out there for when they make this hire. The sooner the better is what, you know, what they say. But obviously, it's a big process to undertake while you're still coaching a team, while you still obviously have recruiting going on, while everything ramps up here in the next month. But, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier about kind of personality fits too, and like how people align with the staff, you know, conversely, that's something that Manny Diaz has done really, really well. I mean, I was asking people about it this year, yeah, of like, how is this guy, what's he like? And Jaywan's like, you know, he's like, he goes, you guys don't see it, of course, as much, but he's like, Manny likes to crack jokes. He's really done a nice job of fitting in with that staff, which is interesting too, because you're coming from that head coaching background, which James Franklin's talked about so much with Manny Diaz, and like, he gets it. He understands that there are a million things that James Franklin has to do because he had to do that at Miami, you know? That to me, we saw the Broyles Award 15 semifinalists came out on Monday. Manny Diaz is among those 15. That award goes annually to the nation's top assistant coach. There's another interesting name on that list to me, John, and that is UCLA defensive coordinator Danton Lynn, former Nittany Lion.
Yes.
He was actually among the first or second group of guys that I covered here when I was a student. So now I feel old.
Listen, if we will get to this point if Manny Diaz takes a head coaching job, but I like, there are names worth monitoring, right? When it comes to those kind of things. And we know that Chip Kelly is not exactly on the thickest of ice. Mm-hmm. Do they have ice
out there, John?
Well, if he had any, it's probably pretty much gone at this point. We've seen some reporting already that Kelly will be gone. I don't know. You know, I'm doing no reporting on that, so I don't know how true that is, the veracity of that report. But like, there's a chance where he becomes available too. Danton Lynn does, and I will be curious to see how a defensive coordinator search goes. And so,
because yeah, we're about young, up and coming guy, obviously Penn State ties, his experience in the NFL. Again, I'm throwing that out there because I think it makes a little bit of sense. But also because I just kind of naturally went to that talking point, John. So just putting that out there for the people listening.
I think it's worth thinking about, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think I want to make you go on the record with this.
Oh boy,
I'm going to set a before
this
or after.
Never ends. It's not
technically an over under, right? Before or after no, sorry. December, what is today's date? The 21st?
1st of November.
Let's go before or after December 1st. For an offensive coordinator's hire.
That's a good one. After.
But not going after?
Yeah.
So that would put us at, I believe that is just before December 1st is, and I'm really bad at that.
Let's see. I'm pulling up my calendar now.
I know. I have to do the same thing.
December 1st is a Friday.
Yeah, it's the Friday before championship Saturday. I will say before, I think there's a world where this is done. Obviously, this would have to be the case if I'm saying before that this is done in the next 10 days, right? Like, I think that they've obviously been putting work in on
10 days is the first.
And a lot of regular seasons end this coming weekend, right? So things can really ramp up. If you've taken advantage of that extra 2 weeks, I would guess it's been narrowed down then, right? Like that, or at least you have an idea of what that candidate looks like. And there's a chance that, you know, seasons come to an end, what have you. And that
it's only been a week, a little more than a week since the search started. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you do have the benefit of that time, right? That's why you made the move when you did, if you're James Franklin. So yeah, I will go after.
I like that we disagreed on this because now one of us gets to be right and brag about it.
Well, because you say the first, and that means somebody, if it's correct, is getting their first weekend off torpedoed. So
I hate that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's like why that I was. Anymore.
Can I change my mind?
Nope.
No, see, listen, now, but here's the thing.
We're already going to have Sunday bowl selection.
If it's before the first, then maybe it's like November 29th. Right. And then we have the whole weekend still ahead of us. And you're just working on Wednesday.
Like, we're going to have bowl selection next weekend, which always messes with your Sunday.
There really are no weekends off until January.
Typically, bowl selection, we hear from James Franklin that night with his reaction. And then that makes for an interesting press conference when it's like, hey, you're here to talk about the bowl game, but you just hired an offensive coordinator. And we really want to talk about that.
Or potentially like before. Other coaches have left for other jobs, right? Like that is head coaching searches go quickly.
It is. I tell you, that's the crazy thing about this time of year, right? Is you've got the coaching carousel revving up, right? Penn State is hopping on there, needing an offensive coordinator. You also have the players. Are they coming back? Are they contemplating transfers? Are they going to go to the NFL? Or are they going to wait to make a decision? Are they going to play in a bowl game? Are they going to opt out? Like, December is the craziest month in college football. Like, the busiest, craziest. I hate this calendar as much as the coaching staff probably does.
Yes.
Because it just feels like we're constantly chasing stuff. December is a brutally busy month, and we know that now after going through it several times. And of course, you're going to have the signing day, the early signing period. That's a huge part of it right before Christmas. That's always out there, always happening. But I don't know, John. I'm hoping maybe we get a couple days breather.
Yeah, good
they
one.
Don't name an OC then, but probably not.
That ain't happening. But no, it's even worse because I cover men's basketball too, and they've added these a few years ago, added the two early Big Ten games. So there's two Big Ten games from on December, I think, 5th and 9th this year. So it's like that's the window where things are not as busy. And it's like, oh,
things will be
a
busy.
New era of men's basketball. There are new, there are the first two conference games, and we get to learn a lot about that team too. So yeah, it is going to be hectic and chaotic because it always is. Players will enter the portal, players will arrive from the portal. Don't think I'm breaking news to anybody on that front.
Guaranteed, this roster will not be the same next year, folks. It never is. That is not a hot take. That is fact. I will say, because this came up on our player calls Tuesday, and I shouldn't even say came up. I was the one asking the question. I brought this up. We spoke with Tyler Warren, and I asked him about his future, if he's given it thought. Because to me, that he's going to be a really intriguing NFL prospect. And of course, I kind of got the I'm focused on Michigan State answer, like we'll deal with this after the season, which is similar to what Theo Johnson said. We also talked with Chop Robinson on Tuesday. I also asked him about his future. That's kind of my thing this week, I guess.
You got a line of questioning, at least.
I got a line, and he said, Chop said that, again, he's focused on Michigan State this week, and then he'll think about this at a later point. So we'll hear from some guys after practice tonight as well. Kalen King is among them. Sal Wormley, which to me, he's an interesting one because there is a COVID year there if he wants it. Caden Wallace last week, of course, has a COVID year if he wants it. He said he hadn't really given any thought to what he's going to do at this point
His answers in particular were really interesting.
Really interesting guy in general, I think. One of the more fascinating interviews on this team.
Yeah, and just mentioning several times that he does have another year. like it seemed like there was an emphasis. I don't want to read too much into it.
I wouldn't read too much into it. I think it's – I get that players hate that we're asking the questions, but I think many of them also understand that we have to ask the questions. I mean,
Caden kept emphasizing that he had.
I think it's because he kept getting asked about it. I mean, my point on this, John, would be he's put together a really solid year, by far his most solid year. Maybe you just kind of ride that out and go to the NFL at that point, right? I don't know. I could be completely wrong. Or do you try to build off of it? Obviously, the relationship with Phil Troutwine and these guys is certainly a part of that. But to me, I kind of see that as your stock's pretty high right now. But again, that's me. I'm not an NFL talent evaluator, although I am a Green Bay Packers shareholder, which really doesn't get me much other than a nice certificate over on my wall over there.
Doesn't even get you tickets to an away game against the Lions on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that gets me really nothing. But let's see, what else from the presser do we need to get to?
Well, I was going to say real quick on the guys leaving. I don't want to speculate really on any of those guys making those decisions, but I do think there are some obvious, it would be a surprise if these guys came back. Candidates,
Olu Fashanu, Kalen King.
Olu, Kalen King, Chop Robinson. Those three are the three I think we've all had penciled in for a long time. That it makes sense.
Sure, mock drafts certainly. Again,
we've seen Olu come back before, though. We've seen guys make decisions, so I don't want to speculate on what
in the day and age of NIL,
what their motivations are. Right, guys come back. It has happened before. I'm sure it will happen again.
See Blake Corum at Michigan.
Yeah, well, it happened with Chris Olave a couple years ago, right? At Ohio State. He came back for another year. I do think this is – we're slowly inching toward the complete roster management portion of the calendar where we start about incoming guys and outgoing guys and incoming coaches and outgoing coaches. And we're trying to – at least I am trying to watch – too many games of guys that were coaching at random schools last year to try and figure out what they do offensively or what they do defensively, because that's who I am at my core.
Sounds like bad use of your time, John.
It is. I do it anyways.
But there was, was there anything else? Oh yeah, there was something else with the press conference. James Franklin was asked about, again, so you can't, the rules with recruiting, James Franklin is not allowed to talk about prospects by name at this point, right? Until guys sign, they're not allowed to talk.
By the way, just a really dumb NCAA rule. It's stupid. shocker, an NCAA rule doesn't make any sense.
But there's a lot of things that have come into play that don't really make sense in the NCAA, but here we are. So he was asked about a report, which is essentially my report, that what I had written last week about Beckham Kretza, the 2025 quarterback commit in Colorado, and essentially the timeline of James moving on from Mike Yurcich. So I have in my story up on The Athletic that Kretza met with James Franklin and some staffers before the game to announce his commitment. Of course, he went public with that Monday, but he did commit that Saturday. And what he had told me during my interview with him last week, I'd asked about Mike Yurcich, and I said, which I think any reporter should do in that situation is, hey, did you have any idea that Mike Yurcich wasn't going to be there, when you committed as your future offensive coordinator? And he told me that James Franklin had hinted to it, that he wasn't going to be there. He also told Johnny McGonigal of Penn Live, that he said, yes, of course I knew that Mike Yurcich wasn't going to be my offensive coordinator. Of course, James Franklin told me that. So again, this is what was said on the record, what was reported. Now, some fans, I think, have also taken those comments and twisted them a little bit and kind of fast-tracked the timeline and said, well, why would he do this? James Franklin knew this. So again, Franklin was asked about this Tuesday and basically denied... Monday. Basically denied saying it, but said that he could see how dots could be connected for the kid to put that together. Again, I stand by my reporting. I asked him multiple times, asked him again to make sure I was understanding what he was telling me correctly. So it certainly sounds like there was a communication breakdown between quarterback and head coach, the way I interpret it. Because it's something there kind of went awry, and his story was consistent with myself and Johnny McGonigal at Penn Live.
Yeah, no, I think you put it all really well. I would not expect you to do anything other than stand by your reporting. It is all on the record. He said it. And I think it's funny to me that there's been some consternation about this, that you're inferring, or Johnny would be inferring, something that wasn't actually true when it's all just laid out to bear, right? Like, it's not like you,
yeah, there were no dots for me to connect. I was not painting the subject in a corner. I don't bait my interviewers into saying things, right? That's not my style. I've got more than a decade of reporting experience to fall back on.
It's not a journalist style to do that kind of thing either. Like,
yeah, like, there are questions. There are questions that need to be asked of your subjects. That's my job. I ask them. Again, so that's kind of, it is what it is, but it certainly sounds like there was a communication breakdown there, which, again, James Franklin even mentioned last week, that, you know, they had hoped that the quarterbacks were going to call their parents after finding out about Mike Yurcich's firing. Then they went to practice, and between those few hours, the story broke, because you broke it, John.
Who did that?
Again, so it sounds like there could have been a communication breakdown there as well. Again, that is not us trying to put somebody in an awkward situation. That is doing the job.
Our job is to find this information and report it, right? Like, mm-hmm. the relevant stuff about this program, and recruiting is relevant to this program. And the inference that somebody was, you know, the quote from James at the end, that wouldn't put a kid in recruit in that type of position. Beckham is old enough to commit to a high level university and make a really life changing decision, and mm-hmm. old enough to and speak about it on the record.
And you're willing to accept that decision.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. If you were willing to accept that, then you also know that recruiting sites, that you, that Johnny, that other people will reach out to speak to these kids about their commitments and why they committed, and explain the time.
Literally every kid who commits, I reach out to them. Yes. Because again, that is a function of my job.
The most normal question is, how did you commit? Like, what was that like?
Yeah. What was the coaching staff's reaction? Right? Is what we ask every kid who commits. So to me, that was just a basic common question to ask. So I asked it, and there's also, I mean, there's more in the story too. Fascinating prospects. He's bounced around a lot of different high schools, has a relationship with TA and TK Cunningham, which those who are very into recruiting obviously know the value of TA and TK, his brother, a 2027 prospect. So again, there's a lot there, but I just wanted to make sure we touched on that.
Yeah, no, it is. I don't know. I think I have.
Is that why you wore a new sweatshirt, John, that has a lot of dots on it? Because you were trying to get me to connect something?
This isn't even a new one. I just don't get to wear this one because it's blue and white. And I wouldn't wear it on. I don't wear like blue and white on game days because I don't wear either team's color on game day. And so I never get to wear this. And so it's actually relatively
It's a Spartan green, in case anyone's wondering, watching on YouTube.
That'll get you to catch a stray tonight at practice. I think I have a lot of opinions about this that maybe best kept to myself. I think you are absolutely correct for standing by your reporting, and you know that this is maybe not overblown, but I also understand how maybe Beckham misunderstood something and how that could have been a breakdown. But at the end of the day, he understood it how he understood it, and you explained how he understood it, right? That's it. This is you know, he went on the record to say those things and how it happened. So,
yeah, it wasn't rocket science for us. This was just another day doing our jobs. So, John, are we ready to flip the page to the regular season finale officially?
Yeah, this is going to be,
definitely
a football game, and one that is probably going to look a lot like the last one, if I had to guess.
Yeah, beginning of the year, this was kind of one of those games that I was like, yeah, we obviously need to be there. I'm at basically every away game, but it's kind of like, yeah, you look at the implications, what we thought this team was going to be. Yep, got to be there. Boy, a lot has changed in the last month, and now you say, do I really need to cover this? Do I need to be there? Of course, the answer is yes. But... yes, it's not the game that I thought we were getting back in August.
Yeah, all of the big picture stuff is kind of out the window. Not all of it, I guess. They can make a New Year's Six Bowl and probably will, assuming they win this game. Michigan State is in turmoil, obviously. Whole Mel Tucker scandal that saw him fired for cause. I think it was September 27th. And some reporting by some reporting by Dan Murphy of ESPN that there was the Michigan State athletic director was eyeing a separation with Mel Tucker before the season. So very interesting stuff going on there. And all of it has nothing to do with Friday, other than that it's probably Harlan Barnett's last game as Michigan State's head coach. He's the interim head coach. And I imagine that that hire, listen, if you get a few months head start and you don't make a hire pretty quickly, then you did something wrong. So I imagine that that head coaching search is wrapped up, you know, sooner rather than later, to put it in James's terms. But this is not a good Michigan State team. They made a quarterback change halfway through the year. The offense isn't very good. The defense has been competitive at times, but this is mostly a messy program that is just kind of playing out the strength. Offense is
really bad.
Yeah. Malik Carr is good, though.
Yeah. So Malik Carr is good. Yeah, their offense is pretty disjointed, pretty messy. I will say, John, when I think of this series, one of the things I think about, besides the Langerhans Trophy, of course, is where we were a couple years ago when Mel Tucker and James Franklin both got those big contract extensions around the same time. It was like 2 days or the night before Thanksgiving. Because I remember I was home, literally was working in my parents' basement because of this contract news, and I was home for Thanksgiving. And then, of course, Penn State was going out there to play in East Lansing the next day. And that's, you look at where both of these programs are since then. Long-term contracts in college football, man. What a thing. It's pretty wild when you just, again, kind of look at 2 years ago, the magnitude of those contracts and how we arrived here. But there is also the element for Penn State of you're playing in Detroit, an area that you've recruited really well, an area that means a lot to guys like Kobe King and Kalen King and Jalen Reed, who essentially are getting a home game. Theo Johnson, too, because right across the river in Windsor. I did that trip when he was a senior in high school. I went to do a story on Theo. Went across literally across the river or whatever it is, that body of water into Windsor. I asked him, you know, John, as I always do, how he recruited, what the coaching staff's reaction was to his recruitment at the time, as one does, as I always do. But yeah, this is a game close to home for him when you look at it too. So a lot of extra players or extra family and friends that the players expect to have on hand at the game this weekend. They were talking about that today and how it's special for some of their family members and extended family and friends who haven't had a chance to see him play in person in college. They now get that opportunity to play in Ford Field. Jalen Reed said, I believe he's played at Ford Field 3 times before, because a couple of at least 2 high school state championship games, Kobe King and Kalen King had played there in Little League football before. There's a story that they told me earlier, I think it was during the bye week when I sat down with them, that when they were there in Little League, Kalen did not get to play. He didn't see the field because there were some like youth football politics involved with it, but Kobe did play. So Kalen was like, I'm really looking forward to actually getting to play at Ford Field this time, as opposed to, you know, when he was a kid, which is pretty wild. Cause I had said to him, I was like, man, like, so who was ahead of you? And he was like, oh, you know, like youth football, one of those types of deals. So that's a big moment for those guys. It's going to be really nice for them and their families. But yeah, John, other than that, this game is the NBC showcase game, which means I'm getting ready for it. Now we're going to start hearing the complaints about a lot of commercial breaks.
Yeah. Well, it's also going to be on at the same time as Oregon State, Oregon, and Civil War is going to be a big one this year. So,
and there's the early Black Friday NFL game, the Amazon game with Miami.
Yeah. Which I didn't even realize was a thing till a couple days ago. But most importantly of all, Iowa, Nebraska at noon. Tune in, folks. I'll be watching.
that is your music right there.
That's right. That'll be a 2-0 game, and I cannot wait. But no, this Michigan State team and this Michigan State game is more about a homecoming, like you mentioned, for those guys, kind of putting a cap on a career for some guys, or close to putting a cap on a career, depending on who plays in bowl games and whatnot. But this is just kind of the I don't want to call it the dreary end, but in some ways it is, right? Like it's another 10-2 season, another successful year that didn't quite reach the threshold. And I mean, we can do our predictions now, but I would be pretty surprised if Penn State doesn't win this game.
John, if they don't win, this thing's gonna get ugly.
How bad do we think it's gonna get if they don't win this game? What is the scenario here if they don't win this game? Because they're not making a New Year's Six Bowl if that happens, right? And they're not
I don't see that happening. I mean, it would take something pretty catastrophic, pretty horrific for them to blow a game like this, I think. The temperament certainly would be there'd be a lot of angst online. I'll put it that way. A lot of angst.
Yeah. And there is, spread for this game, by the way, I think is at 21. It's been hovering around 20, 20 and a half, 21, 21 and a half in that range. I will go with Penn State 35, Michigan State 13 covering that 21 and a half. Again, stop me if you've heard this before. Penn State's offense isn't great, but should be good enough to score on this Michigan State team. Michigan State's offense is bad and will be unlikely to be able to score against Penn State's defense. I think it's a tale we've seen all year, right? Like, it's Illinois, it's Northwestern, it's Iowa.
Iowa.
It's Rutgers. Like, it's all of these games where we've seen this exact script played out. If you've watched those, you've probably watched what's going to happen Saturday. And there are interesting things happening, like with Drew Aller, like with Bo Prabula. But I think for the most part, you're going to see a result that's looked fairly common for this team this year.
Yeah, Penn State opened the season on NBC, right, in that West Virginia game.
Yeah, West Virginia.
Think about all that's transpired since then, right? That was the Drew Aller starting debut. Remember that, John, when it was all the consternation.
Optimism about the offense.
Who is your starter, and why won't you tell us who your starter is, all of that. God, that feels like it was forever ago. You had the big...
And now here we are, finding out
who is
bluntly who the starter will be.
Yeah, we've come full circle here on the season. It would really be really, really catastrophic, bad. Something crazy would have to happen, I think, for Penn State to lose this game. I don't think they will. I've got Penn State 31, Michigan State 10, which is the same exact score that I picked last week for Penn State Rutgers. And I was close because it was 27-6 last week. So I've been in the ballpark all season with the exception of picking Penn State to beat Ohio State. I've been pretty close the rest.
Same here. I was off on Michigan as well, like the differential. I had 28-7 last week and ended up being 27-6. So jarringly close on that one.
Yeah.
But the Michigan game, I actually had a reader email me and point this out, and shout out to them for doing that. The Michigan game, I predicted that Blake Corum would have 150 yards on the ground, and I think it was 27 carries or whatever. And I was like a carry and 4 yards off or something like that, which is the closest.
Your season highlight right there.
That's right. But no, I think this is going to be a good win for Penn State. It's going to be a relatively normal game. It's going to be indoors, fortunately, so the weather shouldn't impact.
Love
anything.
That. Yeah, love that for us, too.
I would deeply appreciate that.
Although, John, then, I do wonder, in this, I had asked Jalen Reed about playing at home. And he had mentioned about obviously playing there, and he said he's like, but I'm not crazy about playing on turf.
Yeah,
that was the other thing, because obviously I've been reading, following so much about that in the NFL. A lot of players there have their issues, their concerns with playing on turf. So something to kind of keep in mind too.
Yeah, but we are a few days away from that, and about a week from all hell breaking loose and everything being on the table for everyone within the program at all times, because that's how college football
or a weekend nowadays. Off, John. We could be a week away from a weekend off.
I'm not even going to pretend that that's going to happen. But I think that's a good place to leave it. That'll do it for this week's episode of the Nittany Dispatch. As always, rate, review, subscribe, both on YouTube and Apple Podcasts. You can find Audrey's work at theathletic.com. You can find her on Twitter at oddsnyder4. You can find me at John Sauber and centerdaily.com, of course. Until next time, thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.